This is CICK News. Thanks for joining us. I'm your host, Dan Messick. Each week, we provide an update about events and issues developing right across Northwest BC. CICK News is made possible by the Government of Canada and the Community Radio Fund of Canada, the only organization mandated to financially supporting campus and community radio stations across Canada. CICK Smithers Community Radio is on the dial at 93.9 FM, or you can listen online at smithersradio.com, and we are broadcasting from the unceded Gitindam Territory, home of the Wet'suwet'en Nation. Last month, the Nisga'a-Lism's government in the Nass Valley announced an ambitious new resource project known as the Tsit'lism's LNG project, a 12 million ton per year liquefied natural gas facility at Wilmillit Bay, just north of Prince Rupert near the Nisga'a village of Gingolts. The project will be managed equally by the Nisga'a Nation, Rockies LNG, and Western LNG. The location of the new LNG facility is slated for the Wilmillit Bay area, approximately 15 kilometers east of Gingolks, on treated lands. The proposed site consists of undeveloped but previously logged land in close proximity to existing shipping routes. The project also proposes to achieve a net zero emissions after 3 years in operation, with majority of the product headed for Asian markets. The proposal, of course, aims to generate significant social and economic benefits for the local area, including public revenues, jobs, training, business opportunities for Indigenous nations and other communities in the region. Total direct and indirect economic impact related to the project facility, infrastructure, and upstream activities is estimated at approximately $55 billion. And with much of the consultation with communities and more assessment work to be done, Tsit'lism's LNG is looking to secure final investment and full approval by 2024 and be fully operational by 2027 or 2028. On July 2nd, the BC Environmental Assessment Office received an engagement plan and initial project description, which has been approved so that the project can move ahead with community and partner engagement. However, the facility requires a pipeline to feed natural gas from the natural gas deposits in northeastern BC in the North Montney Basin. Two potential pipelines, the Enbridge-owned West Coast Connector and the TC Energy-owned Prince Rupert Gas Transmission, both pipelines have been approved for several years, but may be subject to regulatory review, according to Mike Sawyer, Executive Director for the Citizens Oil and Gas Council. In 2014, Sawyer questioned the jurisdiction of the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission, arguing that the National Energy Board at the time, now the Canadian Energy Regulator, that the pipeline was incorrectly assessed and should be regulated under federal jurisdiction, not provincial. Although Sawyer received a favorable ruling in the matter, a final determination of the pipeline was never completed. In his recent submission to the Canadian Energy Regulator, Sawyer requested a clarification to be issued, citing that the PRGT project and North Montney pipeline, along with NovaGas's interprovincial pipeline system, together comprise a single federally regulated undertaking, and as such, the PRGT project falls within federal, not provincial jurisdiction, and is subject to regulation under the CER. Sawyer believes that if the Canadian Energy Regulator reviews the jurisdiction of the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Pipeline, it will find its current approval status invalid, which would require a completely new environmental review and approval certificate that could take months or even years to conclude. Although the Nisga'a-Lism's government declined to comment on the new project, today we have Mike Sawyer with us to discuss his interest in this project and why he believes a potential feeder pipeline for the Tsit'lism's LNG project, the PRGT, is invalid.
My name is Mike Sawyer. I'm the Executive Director of the Citizens Oil and Gas Council based in Calgary, Alberta.
Great, Mike. Thanks so much for being with us today. Maybe give me a little bit of a breakdown, an overview of your current application. This is not the first roundabout for you, so maybe explain a little overview of why you wanted to put this application forward, taking a look at the jurisdiction of the PRGT pipeline that the proposed LNG facility up in the Nass Valley looks to connect to.
Well, the history of this issue goes back many years where you know, as people probably know, the Canadian Constitution provides the authority for the provincial governments to manage resource management issues in their province. And that's the exclusive domain of the province. The exception to that is when there is a project that gets pulled into federal jurisdiction. And in the context of pipelines, that is, if a pipeline crosses a provincial or international boundary, it becomes federal. The issue then became when you had it currently have a federally regulated pipeline, because it either crosses provincial or international boundaries, when companies would add on to that pipeline, the issue came up, was that actually a provincially or federally regulated pipeline? And that was a matter that ended up going to the Supreme Court of Canada, and ended up in what's called the West Coast decision. And what the Supreme Court found was that if a pipeline that was otherwise appeared to be provincially regulated was attached to an existing federally regulated pipeline and it was functionally integrated, those are the words of the Supreme Court, then that pipeline became federally regulated. And the issue with the original 2014 application, which I raised with then National Energy Board, was that the Prince Rupert transmission line was, you know, connected to a federally regulated pipeline, the North Montney, which at that time hadn't been built but has been since. And that pipeline was regulated by the National Energy Board and is functionally integrated. So issues like, you know, common ownership, common management, common purpose, in addition to being connected to a federally regulated pipeline, my position was that that pipeline should have been regulated by the federal government. The implication is that it would actually have a proper federal environmental assessment and the opportunity for public hearings, which, as you know, and your listeners know, the BC Environmental Assessment Act does not provide for either, and quite frankly, is a sham. So the objective was to drag it into its proper jurisdiction so that the public could have a more fulsome say and input, and also provide an opportunity where the regulator would make the wrong decision, more likely an opportunity to appeal that decision to an unbiased court. So that was the reason back then. The National Energy Board at the time turned me down. I subsequently appealed that decision to the Federal Court of Appeal and won that. And the court basically quashed the board's decision and sent it back to the board for reconsideration. 2 weeks after that, Petronas announced they were canceling their project. And TransCanada Pipelines at the time wrote to the board and said, you know, the project's been canceled. We don't have a client. Therefore, there's no point in sending it back for reconsideration. The board agreed to that without prejudice. Without prejudice meaning that I could bring the issue forward again in the future if there were material change of facts. And with the NISCA announcement, there is, in my view, a material change in fact. And as you know, the TransCanada has kept their BC permits through both the Oil and Gas Commission and the Environmental Assessment Office is valid. So I have written to the board saying, you know, the material change in fact gives rise to the decision of the Court of Appeal, and I'm asking the board to reconsider or to consider the whether or not the Prince Rupert pipeline is in federal jurisdiction. I've also put them being the Canadian Energy Regulator, which used to be the National Energy Board, on notice that I'll be filing the same application with respect to the West Coast Connector Pipeline, because it really does meet the same set of facts. So it's early stages of this process. I've written that letter. I have not heard a response back from the National Energy Board or the Canadian Energy Regulator in terms of how they want to deal with it. But I'm in a fairly good position because my application is based on a direction to the board from the Federal Court of Appeal. So that's kind of the historical background. You know, if you wanted to ask, well, why would I do this other than simply because it's the law and we purportedly live in a country based on the rule of law and good government, The other issue is that the whole LNG scam, the big lie, I call it, that we have to export this LNG in order to reduce carbon emissions and assist other countries in reducing their climate change impacts is completely untrue. It's been demonstrated that on a life cycle basis, exporting LNG from Northeast BC to China actually has a higher carbon footprint than actually burning coal in China. And, you know, we could have a long conversation about that, but it's simply the mythology that natural gas and LNG are environmentally friendly bridging fuels is just untrue. The other issue, and this has actually been a good issue to bring up with the proponents of this, the Nishka, for example, is that they recently made public announcements about how they were going to, have a climate change project. And one of the elements of their climate change project was supporting LNG because, again, they bought into this mythology. But more to the point, if I was talking to Nishka, I would say, listen, if you are a proponent of this, what's your position with respect to the fact that most of this gas, in fact, maybe all of this gas is going to come from Northeast BC. It's going to come from the very area that the Blueberry River Band just won their Supreme Court decision on, BC Supreme Court decision on, with respect to cumulative effects. And how does the NISCA consider the impacts of this gas proposal on other indigenous communities who aren't going to benefit in the way that they do? And I think I'd be very interested to hear what that answer is, because, the data is pretty clear that in order to meet these LNG exports, that are 25 or 40 year export periods, they're going to have to drill up to 35,000 new wells in Northeast BC in an area that's already had the shit kicked out of it. So I guess one of the questions is if the NISCA really are the stewards and keepers of the land, which they purport to be, how can they do that? Because all they're doing is transferring the enormous ecological cost and social cost of their project to another indigenous nation, which has just won a court battle over the same issue. So it's a bit of a complicated and convoluted matter, but that's really the background and why I'm taking the issue forward.
Yeah. Now, Mike, maybe, tell us a little bit about this organization that you're heading up. What's the function of the organization? Because you mentioned earlier that this is not the only application that you're taking a look at right now that's in review. So maybe tell us a little bit about this new organization that you're heading up and why you think it's important to push forward with these types of issues. Granted that, from NISCA's end of things, as you mentioned, they're trying to talk about the fact that this will be a net zero project, and also because there aren't so many economic drivers in their community in the NASA Valley, that this is something that they're actually looking forward to putting together. And as they said, we'll continue to consult their community, but it remains to be clear whether their communities are bought into this just yet. But first, maybe give us a little breakdown of the organization you're heading up and why you feel it's important to forge ahead with these applications.
Well, the Citizens Oil and Gas Council has been around for a number of years, but has had a fairly low profile. It's been involved with many regulatory hearings over the years, and representing mostly rural folks and sometimes indigenous communities in regulatory proceedings. And essentially, what the Citizens Oil and Gas Council does is provide technical advice and regulatory intervention assistance to communities that find themselves in conflict with oil and gas. And it also has spent some time looking at, public policy matters that relate to oil and gas and its role in our society. And of course, as you know, that has in recent decade or so started to really focus on climate change implications of hydrocarbons. So our view is that there's a need for a group that has specialized knowledge and specialized skills to intervene on the behalf of communities who find themselves in conflict with oil and gas. And that's really the reason behind the organization. As far as the second part of your question, I mean, I fully accept that the NISCA, like many Indigenous communities, is desperately trying to find ways to inspire economic development. And I empathize with that desire and support that desire. But having said that, the method that they achieve that economic goal has to be in the public interest. And it has to be in the public interest in terms of not just the NISCA, but also other Canadians. It also has to be in the public interest of other Indigenous communities who are going to be affected by the decisions, and as well as, you know, globally, when we look at the sort of scale of the climate change crisis. And so while I, you know, empathize and support their goal of economic diversification, I believe this is the wrong way to do it. And I think if they really looked hard into their hearts, they would find that the idea of supporting LNG conflicts directly with their self-image of being stewards of the land. And I think that they are, I mean, they probably should have not gone down this road. But and the other problem with this is that there's many people who, like myself, who want to support and do support Indigenous objectives of self-determination and righting some of the traditional wrongs that they've suffered in Canadian society. Many of those people are saying, well, you know, because they're Indigenous, we can't criticize them and we can't challenge their decisions. And personally, I don't believe that's true. I think we can support them and still be constructively critical of plans that they make. I mean, they're essentially like any other proponent of an LNG pipeline. They just happen to be an Indigenous nation. And so, you know, it's a complicated problem with many different optics that you could put onto it. But I think that, you know, if the NISCA could go and talk to the people of the Blueberry Band about what's happening to that community, they might have an entirely different perspective on the merits of their own project.
Yeah. Mike, I guess the last thing for you, you know, what's the end game here? This is one pipeline that looks like the jurisdiction is up for debate, and obviously your application is asking for that to be sorted out. Whether or not that pipeline is approved or can move forward and connect to this project is questionable, but it seems like the NISCA are committed to building this project. They've supplied a proposal application to take a look at the scope of the project at this point. But if this pipeline doesn't make it through, as well, there's another pipeline. What's to stop them from building a third pipeline specifically just for this project? And also, will you move forward and contest or question that pipeline if that does happen?
Well, there's a couple things here that people need to understand. One is that the provincial permits for this, both of these permits, pipelines, the West Coast and the TC Energy pipeline, both have had their BC environmental assessment certificates extended by 5 years. BC law only allows one extension, and they've already had those. And so both of their extensions will expire by 2024 if the pipelines have not started construction by then. You know, here we are in July of 2021. We've got the NISCA have a long road in front of them in terms of getting all of this organized so that they can begin construction before 2024. On top of that, the NISCA have to apply for an amendment to their permit, because the permits that they have now, both from the BC Environmental Assessment Office and from the BC Oil and Gas Commission, are for a pipeline that ends in Prince Rupert. So they're going to have to change the route, and they're going to have to seek an amendment. On top of that, they do not have a gas export license right now. And so if I was a betting man, I would say, notwithstanding my challenge, they're going to have a very difficult time beginning the construction of these pipelines or one of the pipelines before their provincial permits expire. If I'm successful and we get it bumped into a federal jurisdiction, they will almost be certainly subject to a full hearing in front of the Canadian Energy Regulator or a joint review panel. And that process takes several months. And all of this, well, actually many months, and all of this takes place with a backdrop of rapidly changing provincial, national, and international public policies with respect to climate change. And the fact is that approving a 40-year gas export license, which has massive carbon implications, is just simply not a smart thing to do in 2021. So if you put 40 years, we're talking about we'll still be exporting natural gas in 2061. That's assuming that everything was lined up. But the point is that it's an old technology. It's in its dying days, and it makes no sense to invest tens of billions of dollars and lock us into 40 years of extremely high carbon emissions at a time when we should be doing everything in our power to reduce our carbon emissions. So this is in many ways is a non-starter and extremely, if I was an investor, I would look at this and say extremely risky proposition. And I think that's the takeaway that the members of the public should have, that we should just not be approving carbon generating projects that have a 40-year lifespan and not at the time we're at. I mean, it just makes no sense at all.
I guess finally, Mike, you know, you've been involved with many of these sorts of applications and issues dealing with regulators over many years. You know, at the end of the day, what do you think needs to happen here? How can we create or what needs to be created to make sure that the playing field is level and that each of these projects, each of these pipelines are looked at fairly and that the regulators, as we've discussed many times before, aren't captive?
Well, so the first thing is that the BC has to take a serious look at revising its environmental assessment legislation. And they've just gone through a process that did that, but they just tweaked it. And they also have to look at the captive nature of the BC Oil and Gas Commission. Almost completely ignoring the range of issues that are in the public interest, you know, environmental, social, and which is what's given rise to the Blueberry River claim and success in the Supreme Court, is that the BC government has ignored their treaty rights by constantly approving against all objections every application that comes in. So that's a serious problem. And, you know, while that started under the previous Liberal governments, Horgan has sort of out-liberaled the Liberals in terms of how he's approached this. So it's a serious political issue. And essentially, the people of British Columbia have to ask themselves, you know, where do they stand on this question? And if they believe that it's important to address climate change, then we have to make substantive changes in our public policies and our legislation so that we move ourselves in the right direction. And I could say the same thing federally. I mean, the federal government has taken some steps and has made lots of feel-good statements, a lot of virtue signaling around the climate change issue. But in terms of actually making hard decisions, those are few and far between. And my point is that I've raised this as a citizen. I have raised this question of jurisdiction. The fact of the matter is, if the federal government was serious about managing climate change, they would have taken this initiative on their own right. And with respect to the issue of gas export licenses, they wouldn't be issuing, 40 and 60-year gas export licenses. in a time when we are all actively thinking about how do we reduce our carbon emissions. So I think that, this is the context of these dilemmas really highlight the problem we have with dealing with our climate change issues in general. And that is that we can't successfully reduce carbon emissions without somehow curtailing our economy or our personal lifestyles or our personal standard of living. You know, there is no free lunch. If we want to reduce carbon emissions, we have to tighten our belts and consume less. And that goes to every aspect of our society.
Yeah, no doubt. Mike, always good to chat with you. Thanks so much for your input and insight on this. And we will stay tuned for what gets back to you on this application.
Okay, anytime, Dan.
That was Mike Sawyer, Executive Director for the Citizens Oil and Gas Council based in Calgary, Alberta, discussing his reasons for pushing forward with his application to receive a determination about the Prince Rupert Gas Transmission Pipeline from the Canadian Energy Regulator, a possible feeder pipeline for the Tsitlism's LNG project up in the NASA Valley. We will stay on this story as it continues to develop, and once we know whether or not that PRGT pipeline is valid. Thanks again for tuning in to CICK News. If you have any hot tips or news stories you think we should cover, contact us at CICKnews@smithersradio.com or follow us on Facebook at CICK News. You can also catch our fresh shows each week at skeenastrong.com or subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you find your podcasts. Thanks again to our producer, Pam Hassan, and all of our roving reporters. I'm Dan Messick. Thanks for listening.